Hello, this is Charlie Wilson, and this is the CoLab podcast. I am working as the communications officer for the International Permaculture CoLab, and today I have a very special guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Cool. I'm Rakesh Roots Manrak, permaculture teacher, designer, born in the UK, but I work mostly around Europe and occasionally when I have necessity to go to India for family reasons, I also work in India.
Great, perfect. And yeah, I see your brand name, your company, your project is called Roots and Permaculture. And can you tell me briefly what is the overall aim, the vision of Roots and Permaculture?
So, first of all, one of my backgrounds is as a reggae DJ. So I used to have an online presence, an online community, a really beautiful, friendly reggae community called Roots and Culture. So Roots and Permaculture was a nice, easy, simple jump across. And the idea behind it has it's actually a community. A permaculture community of students, and it's a place where after someone has studied with me, they can carry on studying, they can carry on helping each other for free. So, in other words, regardless of whether they've studied sociocracy, forest gardening, permaculture, done a course on designing cook stoves, rocket stoves, biochar cook stoves, helping to make pedal powered generators, whatever it is they studied with me, they're welcome to join this community as long as they understand and adhere to kind of the ethos, which is it's a community that helps each other to uphold vegan and permaculture values. So as long as they understand what permaculture values are, i.e., earth care, people care, fair share, and really truly live those values, or whatever gets discussed in the community upholds those values. And from a personal perspective, being vegan, and that's also quite important to me about respecting animals and insects and plants and everything. So yeah, as long as they, whatever gets discussed in there upholds those values, they're welcome to come and share. So we have regular monthly gatherings, we're online gatherings, where, people may come and say, "Hey, I'm trying to build a grey water treatment system. Don't know what I'm doing, need some help." And so everyone just rallies and helps. Or, I want to know more about, I know, yeah, I've been struggling a little bit with sociocracy and this particular aspect of it or that aspect of it. Can someone give me some advice? Or perhaps someone studied something. Oh, I've just learned how to ferment this, make this banana vinegar or something. And wow, I just want to share it with you. And so it's just a space where anyone can come and just connect with each other. And many people live in quite remote areas. And so they don't have connection with other people who are of this mindset. So many of them say that it's just really beautiful to once a month be able to just talk to people about stuff that they're also passionate about and just connect with other like-minded people.
Yeah, amazing. So the support doesn't end when they finish one of your courses, and you're
No,
already
absolutely.
fostering this community. That's, yeah,
It's
that's great.
absolutely essential because, during the course, even though, okay, I structure my course very carefully where I give them about five opportunities to design during a permaculture course. So they figure out, the first time, it looks really easy. And then they try and do it. Oh, didn't quite get this bit, didn't quite get that bit. So then they try again. Then I walk them through a design. Then they try again, then they try, and then they go into their big group designs, by which time they make the most amazing designs because they've learned what their limitations were before. And they really now deeply understand how to make designs, how to use principles. I also get them to make toolboxes. So at the end of, when you want to go and design for yourself, you've got a structure. So the first card in your toolbox is the structure, and I've designed my own methodology that sits on top of SADIM or any OBRADIM or SEEP or any of the other methodologies. This sits on top of it and helps you to really coordinate the whole of the methodology. And because it's what I noticed is when I was designing, even though I was taught SADIM and all these other methodologies, the actual way that I was designing didn't really fit that. It was much more chaotic, structured, but chaotic, much more random, much more a little bit of this, a little bit of that, bit here, try that, survey, analyze, survey, analyze, survey, analyze, test the design. A little bit of survey. Oh, that's interesting. Didn't think of that before. Didn't notice that before. More survey, more survey. Test the design, analyze, and ideas. And so it's not a nice, simple, straight pattern. So the methodology I've devised helps you to coordinate that kind of chaotic structure. So I teach that as well. And then so they end up with a toolbox that helps them to manage and find the right tool for each part of the process. So they've got all the tools they need to design, but what I find is people still need some support. They still need, and so to just to leave them, so they have a really good foundation during my permaculture courses. They really understand a lot and they can walk away and they can start making designs straight away, but still they need support. And so to just leave them is, yeah, it's incomplete. My purpose is to not, it's not about making money. It's not my, yes, this is my livelihood, but it's actually about really inspiring and encouraging people to really take action and really make something happen. And so, yeah, so the Roots and Permaculture learning community is really an essential part of that because that's where people can continue to connect, continue to support each other. And it's completely run by the students. It happens
Oh, wow.
regardless of me.
Yeah, I think.
And if I'm not there, I'm not there. If I'm there, I'm there. But they take care of each other. And that's, and so we co-created a vision for it, sociocratically, and all processes, all everything is done purely sociocratically. So they can make decisions. It's not me, it's not my project,
Yeah.
it's our project, and that's
Amazing.
important.
Yeah, and it's like you could be the only person in your village that trying to design permaculture gardens or something. But, being part of a community, I guess, just helps people to know there's many other people out there who are trying to live this kind of sustainable lifestyle. Yeah, so I think it's great. And I read this great quote on your website, "Permaculture is a revolution disguised as gardening." Yeah, I really love that. It really struck me.
So
And
that actually comes from Mike Feingold. That's not my quote.
yeah.
That's it is my favorite definition of permaculture, though. It's from Mike Feingold, really amazing, really incredible character from Brighton. Sorry, did I say Brighton? Bristol. Yeah, really incredible character. And yeah, and for me, that's really because permaculture. Many people get into permaculture because they think it's about food growing. And but it's so much more than that. It's so much deeper. It really totally changes. I had one person who came on one of my courses, this is about 12, maybe more years ago, and she was a teacher and she just retired. She said, "Thank God, I hate kids. I hate school. I hate teaching. And finally, I've now escaped. Now I can look after my garden and just grow stuff. And now I've come to your gardening course so I can learn how to." At the end of it, she said, "Oh my God, this is what we should have been teaching children. How come I didn't know about this before? I need to go back into teaching. This is what we are." And she off we set her up in like some forest schools and various other places. Off she went again and got really, really inspired to go and go back into the world and make stuff happen. So
Amazing.
yeah, revolution disguised as garden. I love it.
Yeah, amazing. And I had a look at some of the events you've got coming up just to get an idea of what you do. So one of them is how to design a forest garden. So what kind of things would somebody learn on a course like this?
So the way that I teach generally, more or less all courses, I don't teach anyone techniques. I teach people how to think. I teach people how to look, see, observe, understand, and then through that understanding, put things together. So in a forest garden course, I will help people to understand how a forest edge works. And quite often I do it as a kind of visualization. So they go in their own minds, they go into a forest, they go to see what it's like in the heart of the forest. They see what it's like, they see what's going on, what in terms of water, in terms of nutrients, in terms of life, in terms of wind, in terms of all the animals and the soil type and the soil life, etc., etc. And they recognize how amazing this soil is, and they try and they get an appreciation of why it's so rich and so strong. And then but they notice that there's no plants really growing in the heart of the forest. And to cut a long story short, when they finally go to the edge of the forest, where now you've got some sunlight mixed with all the amazing nutrients and everything that's coming from the forest and the water and so on and so forth, this is where, life really, this is where, because of this edge, so much food is available. But it's still limited. It's still limited by the availability of nutrients there. So we just explore that and we say, okay, so if that's the limiting factor, we now have light, we now have so many different niches. So the limiting factor is the nutrients. So how do we design more nutrients into it? So logically, people just come up with the answers. I don't need to tell them. I walk them through it and get them to build up a pattern, a picture, and truly understand what's happening in the ecosystem, what is happening, what isn't happening. And then they can easily find solutions for how to plug those gaps and how to complete those cycles. So they'll learn how to research plants, how to understand plants, how to then find the right plant that goes in the right place. And again, this is where if they don't get enough from the actual course, they then come to the Roots in Permaculture learning days and get advice from, thousands, hundreds of people around the world who do know about plants. And so in this way they're truly supported. I then do a further course where an online course. So normally I do in person and sometimes some online introductions. And then later on at the end of the year, I'll then go through a an 8-week course where we online once a week for 4 hours, where I help each person to design their own private, personal, or community forest garden. So they'll come in and we'll start off with a survey. Then they've got a week to go and do their survey, gather all the information they need. Then they come back, they say, I did this, but I didn't know how to do that part. Okay, let me help you with that part. All right, for your place, this is all. Look, there's this information already here. There you go. And so I literally help them step by step, right, what trees, what yields do you want? All right, so now let's find different plants. Do you want it as a You want this yield through a tree, through a shrub, through an annual, through a perennial, herbaceous. If you want it as a climber, and obviously it's not just food yields. It's, do you want soaps? Do you want crafting materials? Do you want, and so step by step, I just walk them through the design process. Right. How do you get enough nutrients for that? How do you space it correctly? How do you start creating guilds, and how do you make your pathways? How do you start capturing water, and so on and so forth? So literally, I just step them through everything they learned during the course. I then help them to put it into action, step by step.
Amazing, yeah. Wow. So yeah, they have so much support with the actual practical application. So they're not just going off a bit, whoa, it's so much information now, I'm a bit confused. They're really putting these things into action. That's great.
And that's the
Amazing.
point. The point is, it's not just about teaching people and having a world full of very intellectual people who know lots of stuff but don't actually put anything into practice. For me, that's not interesting at all. What's interesting for me is what my life's work is about is inspiring people to, into action. You know, we can see the state, the rate at which we're degrading our soils, degrading our biodiversity. We can see how the climate patterns are changing, and we can see the repercussions of this. And to just stand around and say, "Oh yeah, we recognize that. That's nice. Oh, we could do this to fix the problem," but yeah, I've got all the information in my head, but let's not do anything because excuse, 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 excuse. Not interesting. Not my. Not what I'm about. That's why I make my courses really affordable. I make my courses in such a way that regardless of your how much you earn, regardless of your income status, you can somehow come on my course. I will make sure that anyone who applies, there is a way for you to participate in my course, because
Amazing.
actually some of the people who are most have the least amount of resources are the ones with the most incentive to actually take action. And you know, those who are comfortable, they're comfortable. We may do it, we may not do it, but you know, but yeah, I've done a course, I've done several courses in a subject, but there's no driving force to actually make the change.
Yeah, sure.
I'm
Not
interested in
so much
catching those
hunger.
people really. Yeah, I'm interested in finding those people who really want to make a difference and just need some support to make that difference. That's why the course itself is really affordable. You know, really flexible. And then I even pick my venues in such a way that it makes it affordable for people. So the cheaper the venue is, the more I give the venue in return for having the course there. So I put my time, my energy, even some of my money into the venue to make sure that it's then affordable for students.
Yeah.
And yeah, so we can get
Amazing.
the people who really want to make a difference.
That's great. Wonderful. Very inspiring. And yeah, I've had a bit of contact with you on the collab, and I understand and I've seen that you're making some content around decolonizing permaculture. Super interesting. I wonder if you can share something about this.
Sure. Obviously, all right, so my how I got into permaculture is that and when people ask me when I started permaculture, I say when I was 4 years old, because that's when my mum gave me a cucumber plant to plant, and just the absolute fascination of watching this thing grow and then start putting on flowers, and then, oh, look, there's a little vine of cucumber, and then you can eat, and it's like, wow. And just that absolute total fascination with how things work, why they work, why. That was my start. And coming from a poor family, we had to, we grew our own food. We, you know, wherever possible, we would make our own clothing, our own furniture. You know, when things broke, we would fix it ourselves. So we would always, we wouldn't waste anything. We'd hardly buy anything. You know, we would just make do with whatever we had. And so we already, and also being an, from my culture, there is a huge, it's just part of our culture to respect nature, to respect each other, to, respect resources and animals and insects. And it's so there's nothing really in permaculture that is new to me. And when I first came across it, I was like, wow, you need to teach people that? Really? That's common sense, isn't it? And people, when I went to my first eco village, people was like, wow, you should teach us this. What do you mean me teach you? You should teach me. You're the ones living here. Yeah, but you understand it. Yeah, but that's just common sense. That's not, you don't need to learn that. That's just common sense. It's just obvious, isn't it? And I realized that actually, yeah, common sense is not really that common because of the education system, because of media, because of how people are brainwashed into just seeing really myopically and just seeing a small part of a picture. I mentally left school at the age of 12 because I could see they were brainwashing me, and I refused to be brainwashed. And so I've never had these blinkers put on, and I can always see the bigger picture. And yes, so sorry, I've lost my thread as to where I was going with that. What was the question again?
Yeah, about the decolonizing permaculture. You're doing some
Decolonizing.
interviews, right?
Thanks. So yes, so because I already had this bigger picture of how things work and how because it is part of my culture. When I first started studying permaculture, the students said they learned as much from me as they did the teachers. And then the teachers came to me and said, "Wow, you know more permaculture than most permaculture teachers I know. You should be teaching this." And it's because it's just common sense, because of coming from that place of being a non-white person in a white country where no one gives you a chance, where no one gives you opportunities, where you have to work 100, 1,000 times harder than anyone else to even get close to the same recognition. The opportunities are so few that you have to take it yourself. You have to make opportunities for yourself. No one gives you anything. So because of this hardship, permaculture is just your life. It just is. So you don't have to teach. And this is and so this is what I want people to be able to see and understand. And obviously, a lot of permaculture is, let's face it, it's white middle class. It appeals to a certain subset of society, and yet, and for many people, you have to teach it to them because they're so disconnected from their surroundings and from nature and so on and so forth. So it has to be taught to them because of how they have been educated and because of their culture. Whereas because it's part of our culture, a lot, if we look at it, David and Bill really got a lot of their inspiration from nature, but also cultures, indigenous cultures, because they've always lived this way. And yet, as it's been packaged, most people see permaculture as coming from two white people. And it's for white people. But actually, it's just taking the inspiration from indigenous peoples who have just lived this way all of their lives for thousands of years, hundreds of thousands of years, perhaps. And so it's just about making that connection back again and saying, well, actually, no. So a lot of non-white, a lot of, I get a lot of real diversity in my classes, and they come to my courses because of the fact that I'm not a white male. And they actually tell me that. And so if we look at the patterns of colonialization, where people have been living in harmony with their surroundings, maybe even fairly passively because they're in such harmony with each other and their surroundings, and then white man comes along at the end of a gun, says, "You idiots, what are you doing it like that for? Do it like this," and completely change their culture, destroy their culture, make them greedy, make them enslaved, etc., etc. Destroy their lands, destroy the culture, the community, etc., etc., and say this is actually modern living, this is actually civilization. And at the end of the gun, totally destroy everything. And then, as we can see, these practices creating more and more disharmony, more and more harm to the world. Now more white people are coming up. What are you doing it like that for? You should be doing it like this. And so more white people are saying, no, permaculture, this is the way you should be doing it. More colonialists telling us what we should be doing when they freaking destroyed our culture in the first place, which was doing this. You then borrowed all of these ideas and concepts from us. You stole it from us, repackaged it as if it's your freaking idea. Get me? You're the ones who destroyed this our culture in the first place and forced us at the end of a gun to do this, enslaved us in order to do this, to do it your way. And now more white people are coming and telling us this is stupid. Why are we doing it this way? We should do it another way. Sorry, this is just really not good enough. So the idea of this looking at decolonialization of permaculture is, and the way that I'm doing is to start to collect stories of how peoples around the world, and it's not exclusively a white or a black thing or an Asian thing, it's, you know, because there are many people in Europe who were living in harmony with their surroundings, and you know, and they were victimized. So witches, for example, anyone who knew about herbs and medicines and really had a good connection with the earth, witch, kill them, you persecute them. And so how to collect those stories, regardless, it's not about color or race or anything like that, but it's about collecting these stories of how different peoples around the world were putting these things into practice. And it's not, and I tried to do this a few years ago, but I was then pretty much stopped because a lot of people wanted to make this an academic process. And I'm sorry, but I have a huge aversion to this academic way of thinking. Because to say that because a white man fucking wrote it down, excuse my language, they wrote it down and therefore it's okay, it's legitimate, but because my grandfather, who is not white, he told me how to do something, that's not legitimate. Fuck off. Sorry. But I'm really, for me, this is really important that, you know, it's really about capturing those stories before they disappear. And just because it's not done in an academic way, you know, to somehow belittle it as if it doesn't exist. And this is, again, this is part of colonialization, you know, of taking other people's cultures, synthesizing it, westernizing it, repackaging it, making it into a commodity that can be sold, totally weakening it, but saying, oh, yeah, this is yoga from India. Yeah, we're all so spiritual, aren't we? And you know, when you look at the heart of yoga nowadays, it's totally destroyed by Western yoga teachers because it does not ever, will never, ever, ever get people to what yoga should and was designed and had been taking people to for thousands of years because it's now a Western commercialized product. And so, yeah, so this is where I'm coming from. It's about how to capture those stories so that we can then present it to teachers. And so that when they're teaching permaculture, they can acknowledge, all right, in the Amazon, this group was doing this practice. In India, at the same time, they were also doing the same kind of thing. And in this part, because it was logical, it was obvious. It's not about finding out who was the first person who did it, who owns this. Come on. This is exactly what I'm trying to work against, is go against that kind of mentality. It's not who are the people doing this that we can recognize and honor them. And yeah, and to do it in a really totally non-academic way as possible, to make it real, to make it something that people can then use. As say, to really inspire so that we can actually show people, you know, of color that actually a lot of this inspiration came from their ancestors. And so you can be proud of the fact that this is actually has been part of your culture for thousands of years. It was stolen from you and repackaged as if it's a white person's thing and then belittled your culture, reduced and destroyed your culture. But actually, it all came from your culture in the first place. And I remember being introduced to someone who ran the Green Fair in London. You know, it was one of the longest running green fairs. And at some point in this conversation, he said, "Why is it you lot don't care about the environment?" Excuse me? Yeah, why is it you lot don't care? Why you don't engage and why you don't participate in like in our green fairs and events and things. What do you mean, my lot? You mean people from East London, people from beard with beards? What do you mean, my lot? So, you know, Indians. And the conversation went on like this until I totally lost my temper, and then I very intentionally, you know, I was on the verge of punching him, for being so fucking racist and so colonialist. And in the end, I shouted and screamed at him. I said, actually, my fucking lot, this was part of our culture for thousands of years until your fucking lot came and destroyed us. And at the end of a gun, changed our way, part of our culture. Every day, in every celebration, in every moment, we give thanks to plants, animals, insects, to nature. We respect, and we've always respected nature. And it's your lot who came at the end of a gun and forced us to stop behaving that way. So it's been part of our culture ever since day one. Whereas your lot are so destructive, are so greedy that you are so disconnected. That's why your lot have to actually invent being green and being environmentally friendly. Whereas it's been part of our culture forever. So don't you tell me that we don't care. Your lot fucking destroyed us to force us to be more like you. And now you're telling us that we don't care. So for some reason, he didn't actually invite me to do any talks at the Green Fair that year. I'm not quite sure why.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, like these lifestyles are just as old as time. Absolutely. And yeah, I can feel your passion and I resonate with everything you say. And I've been in some of these academic worlds, and it's really just like academics writing for other academics, and it's just turns into this, yeah, kind of very exclusive like jerk circle where you have to phrase everything in a certain way, and yeah, making everything accessible and like bringing it back to its roots. I think it's so important. Yeah, it's amazing what you say. Thank you. I can feel your passion.
Sorry for my language, but this is, I'm from East London, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But this is me. This is how I, I'm
Sure.
not here to make friends. I'm here to speak my truth and to speak it the way that, maybe some people need to hear it that way because it's in such a comfortable space. And I'm not here to make friends with you. I'm not here to be the most friendliest, loveliest person on earth. I'm here to speak my truth because the truth needs to be told and people need to hear it in whatever way they need to hear it to get them into action, to actually stop being in this malaise and actually get into action to really make this world into the most amazing, beautiful world that we all know that it really can be. It's remarkable. It's the improbability of this planet existing, of life ever existing, is just insane. The more I think about it, the more how can you not be completely, totally inspired and amazed at this planet and this world and the fact that we are alive? And for us to behave so selfishly to destroy this incredible ecosystem that supports us is just mind-boggling. It's, how anyone can not see this for me is just really, it's soul destroying. So my, we know how beautiful it can be. So my life's goal is to, it's to make a difference and is to get in whichever way I can do it politely, I can do it impolitely. But I'm not going to shirk away from speaking the truth.
Yeah, I think if you're not annoying someone somewhere and polarizing opinion somehow, you're probably not really living from your core.
Yeah, you're sitting on the fence. You're just
Yeah.
being safe. And safe doesn't get you anywhere. You need to take these risks. You need to, to push these edges, create these edges and expand them. And as say, we can see where and how, the system that we live in really marginalizes everyone, makes everyone feel different and how we fear. I think one thing that you can, if we go back in time for sure, and I think that this is massively changing, but in, you go anywhere in like poor countries, Asia, wherever, you see people have so much heart and so much love. They share everything. And so they welcome, in Indian culture, someone who is foreign, it's your duty to take care of them. The duty, someone who is not from your village, from your town, is to look after them, to welcome them, to take care of them. Whereas here in the West, anyone who's different is to be feared. And this for me is the big difference, is you distrust them. And this is the paradigm we're living in. And so when Westerners go to Asia and, oh, it's such a lovely country, it's so nice. And then they come back and they then carry on behaving, with this fear and this scarcity paradigm, and and don't reciprocate that love that they felt when they went to other people's countries. And the fact that they have this wealth is based on the fact that they've exploited these amazing, beautiful, loving, caring people. And that's the only reason they can freaking travel to those countries, is because of the exploitation of those people. And many people just don't see that. They just use this privilege and don't even understand where this privilege came from.
Capitalism, everyone just building their own castle and then drawing up their drawbridge and putting their moat around them. Yeah, we only have a few minutes left, unfortunately. I could listen to you talk all day. It's great. I really appreciate everything you share. So is there anything you want to say? Maybe you can say something about how people can get involved in your projects, how they can get in contact with you.
So I can share some of my links. So presumably through this podcast, there'll be a link to my different websites and Instagram and this, that, and the other. And I'm quite often away traveling, teaching in remote places. So don't be surprised if it takes a while before I reply. But I always reply as and when I can. And I'm always happy to hear from people. I might not be able to answer individual questions about your gardens, but I can certainly point you in the direction of how you can find answers or how you can engage with me and do workshops, and be part of the community that just, let's say, makes the world a better place. I say money isn't an obstacle for money. The worst thing I could hear from someone is that they would love to have done my course, but they couldn't afford it. So that's genuine. Whatever, wherever you are, whatever, whatever access you have to finances, don't be afraid to contact me and offer something, because whatever's offered with love is accepted with love. And as I say, I set my courses up in a way that facilitates anyone to be able to get involved. So,
Great.
yeah, be in touch.
Yeah, wonderful. So yeah, thank you for sharing everything. And yeah, I think everything you're doing is amazing, and I can feel your passion for spreading your message and offering this support to so many people.
My pleasure. Yeah, if you want to learn a little bit more about permaculture, I've also got a nice little podcast of learning permaculture through reggae, which I've just come back from the Big Green Gathering, or the Green Gathering, as it's called now. And so yeah, I took one of my pedal power generators there, so like a pedal power PA system, and so we were just pull out and blasting that, like lots of reggae and little talks about what permaculture is. And there's a really lovely little following of people who was just saying, wow, this is just, I just love how you express this. This is just, and to listen to reggae and then inspiration and then listen to the reggae that backs up and supports what you were just saying. Yeah, they were absolutely like, they were in bliss. So feel free to listen to that. Give me some comments and just enjoy whatever it is you do. Just do it with love. Put earth care, people care, fair share into action, and yeah, just go for it and enjoy.
Okay, perfect. All right, we've come to our end. So thank you again, and goodbye.
Okay, thanks.